The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
On March 24, 1988, 23-year-old Stacy Colbert was reported missing from her apartment in Columbus, Ohio. Inside, detectives found signs that she had been abducted. For more than 6 years, Stacy's family searched for answers, with no idea what happened to her or where she might be. Then, in 2004, her remains were discovered in a remote area of Delaware County, Ohio. Her death was ruled a homicide, but more than two decades later, no one has been arrested, and Stacy's murder remains unsolved. Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week, I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing, whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. And a follow-up from last week, after I had addressed that some people were unsubscribed, weren't getting notifications, you guys responded in the comments and confirmed my worst fears. That is exactly what's going on here. So please take a second, check your YouTube, make sure that you're still subscribed, have your notifications turned on, just click that little bell. And if you're a podcast listener on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please make sure you're subscribed. And if you haven't already, I'd really appreciate it if you leave a review. Before we dive into the episode, I want to talk about CrimeCon. I get a lot of DMs, a lot of emails, a lot of messages asking, hey, where can I meet you? Are you going to be doing any live shows? And I don't know what the plans are for Detective Perspective, but there are some talks about doing something in the future. However, I will be at CrimeCon, and last year, my co-host for Crime Weekly, Stephanie Harlow, we did a live podcast together. And CrimeCon, for those of you who don't know, is a great event. It brings together some top content creators in the true crime space, investigators, criminal psychologists, forensic pathologists, profilers, some of your most recognizable TV faces that you see all the time, Chris Hansen, Nancy Grace, you name it, they're there. And they do some great expos and conferences, and they discuss different topics in the true crime space to talk about investigations and how cases are ultimately solved. It's a really great time. We've met thousands of people over the years, and I enjoy getting the opportunity to meet all of you, to talk with you, take photos with you, all that good stuff. So if you're not already signed up, you can head over to the CrimeCon website. I believe it's crimecon.com. And if you want to meet us or be on our list, use the code CRIMEWEEKLY to sign up. That's the best way to do it because that lets them know who's coming for us. And they can kind of allot time and make sure we have a spot so we can meet everybody. So again, If you want to check out CrimeCon, head over to crimecon.com. And if you decide to purchase a ticket, use the code CRIMEWEEKLY and you'll get 10% off. So that's active right now. I really hope to see you guys there. All right, so Stacey's case, it's an older case. We're getting close to 30 years now, but this is an actual investigation that has a real possibility of being solved. And when we get into the episode tonight, you're going to see that there are some persons of interest. There may even be some DNA evidence. So this case is very promising, which is why I wanted to bring some attention to it, just in case the DNA doesn't pan out. Maybe there's someone out there who knows something. And I do want to mention that we were also fortunate enough to have Stacey's sister Danielle and her friend Paula work with us on this episode, which is greatly appreciated. As much as we try to do as good as we can with each and every case, there's no substitute for having family members, close relatives, or close friends work with us on this investigation, because you guys know our number one goal. It's to get these cases solved. And the number one thing that could help in that is to make sure that we deliver the most accurate and up-to-date information possible. And who better than the people who are boots on the ground and have been living this nightmare every single day. So I know it's not easy to do, but thank you for reliving this tragedy to help make sure that I get out this story in the most accurate way possible. I truly appreciate it. And although I didn't know Stacey personally, she seemed like she was an incredible human being, and I'm honored to be covering her story. And there's a lot to talk about here, so I don't want to waste any more time. Let's dive into this week's case. Stacey Colbert was born on February 3rd, 1975 in Chicago to her parents Ronna and Lawrence Colbert. She later grew up in the small town of Charleston, Illinois, surrounded by a close-knit family. She was especially close with her older sister, Danielle, who, like I said, we had the privilege of working with on this episode. Danielle told us, quote, "Stacey was very upbeat. It was always so much fun. She really took every part of life and made it more fun and bigger." After high school, Stacey followed the family tradition and attended Ohio State University. Her dad and uncle had both gone there, and at the time, Danielle was also a student at OSU. Stacey majored in marketing and pledged into the sorority Alpha Delta Pi. It was there that she met Paula, who became one of her closest friends. Paula described Stacey as pure of heart and very trusting. Paula told us, quote, "You noticed Stacey right away because she was always smiling. If someone was down, she would do anything to cheer that person up." In the summer of 1997, Stacey graduated from Ohio State. About 6 months later, she was hired by American Electric Power, known as AEP, as a marketing analyst, a position that sometimes required travel. Stacey loved her job and would often go into work very early just to get a head start on her day. Around that same time, Stacey adopted a kitten named Boots and moved into her new apartment in Governor Square in Columbus. By all accounts, everything in her life seemed to be falling into place. In February of 1998, Stacey celebrated her 23rd birthday. Danielle took her to see Titanic, which had been released a few months earlier and had quickly become a cultural phenomenon. The sisters had a great time and were already looking ahead to the Academy Awards, or the Oscars, scheduled for March 23rd. The film had been nominated for 14 awards, and they were really excited to see how many the movie actually won. Tragically, Stacey would never get that chance. On Monday night, March 23rd, Danielle and her mom watched the Oscars from their own homes. They assumed that Stacey was watching from her apartment, so throughout the night, they called her to talk about what was happening, but Stacey didn't answer. At first, there wasn't much concern. Stacey could have gone to her friend's place, or she might have been traveling for work, and this was before texting, so it wasn't unusual to lose touch for the night. Danielle and her mom left several messages on Stacey's answering machine as the night went on, but Stacey never called back. Concern grew the following day at around 5 p.m. when Danielle received a call from Stacey's employer. They told her that Stacey hadn't been to work in 2 days and hadn't called in sick or offered any explanation. That immediately raised alarm bells for Danielle. Stacey was dependable. She would never miss work without calling. So Danielle contacted her parents and then drove straight to Stacey's apartment. When she arrived, Stacey's car was still parked outside, and as Danielle approached the unit, she noticed the apartment door was slightly open. Inside, Stacey was nowhere to to be found. And things were definitely off. The apartment smelled strongly of bleach. The refrigerator door was wide open. A pizza box sat on the kitchen island next to a carton of milk, and several cabinets were left open as well. Nothing about the scene made sense. Danielle knew something was wrong, so she called 911 and reported Stacy missing. Columbus police responded quickly, and from the beginning they treated the case very seriously. Missing persons detectives were brought in and began processing the apartment within a few hours. Detectives found no signs of forced entry or robbery. Stacy's purse was still inside, containing $40 in cash, several uncashed checks, and her car keys. Even though there were no visible signs of struggle, the open door, the food left out, and the open refrigerator door suggested that Stacy had left suddenly and not by choice. Detectives believe she had been abducted, likely by someone she knew. Given the circumstances, the homicide team and the FBI were brought in to assist. Now, I do want to note that as detectives were processing the apartment, they located something on the living room carpet that led them to remove a large section of it and keep it for evidence. To this day, they have never disclosed what led them to take the carpet, so it does leave me wondering at this point, what did they find and did anything ever come of it? You have to assume that it wasn't too significant at this point because there's never been an arrest, but I do wonder if something they found was extremely useful and yet technology and science didn't allow for it to be used to its fullest potential. And we're going to talk about that more when we go through the episode, especially when we get to some of the comments that were made by detectives much later. And as you hear what they have to say, I think you're going to agree with me that there may be some truth to what I'm saying as far as this being something that could be useful, but unfortunately, it's just not quite there yet. And this wasn't the only thing that they found. Detectives also located significant evidence on or near Stacy's door. There were handprints on the entry door pointing toward the door itself, and on the inside of the door, about the same height as the doorknob, there was a large boot print. Now, fingerprints were also taken from the door, though it's unclear whether any of them ever matched a suspect or person of interest. So we have a few things here, potentially could lead somewhere, although we have to acknowledge that this is an apartment, right? And people are coming and going from that location. It is also worth noting at this point in this story that Stacy was in a significant, serious relationship with her boyfriend. And I'm not going to talk too much about him because from what I've learned from everybody involved here, he is not a person of interest, not a suspect. He has been fully vetted and has an alibi for the night in question. So we're not going to talk a lot about him because from every corner that I've searched, there's no way he's involved with this. But I bring him up because that's going to be another set of fingerprints, potential footprints, DNA that could be tied to the scene. And that is something you would expect because he had been in that apartment multiple times. So you got to go through all those prints, identify the people that belong to those prints, and then see what you have left. You hope that you have one or two prints that you can't link to anybody yet, but through investigations and interviews, you may stumble across someone who becomes a person of interest who may not have been allowed in that apartment. And if you find their DNA or their fingerprints inside, well, then they have a problem. I also want to quickly talk about Stacy's apartment in general, just the layout, because as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, law enforcement believes that Stacy left abruptly and not under her own free will. And I do believe that's the case as well. And they went on to elaborate a little further and say that it was potentially someone she knew. I'm not willing to go there yet. And the reason being is because Stacy's door didn't have a peephole and there were no windows on the side of the door. So if someone had knocked and maybe they didn't know her prior to this, but she opened because she didn't have any reason not to, that person could have barged inside and then took control of the situation. And this person wouldn't have to have a previous relationship with Stacy. This could be someone who only saw her once or twice and decided tonight was the night that they were going to make their move. So I do agree that whatever happened, it happened quickly. And clearly, Stacy didn't leave on her own. But I'm not willing to go to the extent of, without a doubt, Stacy knew her offender because I don't have anything to support that. Would it make sense from the perspective of someone knocking on her door, her saying, who is it? This person saying, hey, it's me, making it more reasonable for her to open the door? Sure. But it's also possible that based on the circumstances, someone knocked and said, hey, there's a problem, or I can please help me. And Stacy unfortunately opened the door just a little bit, and then that person forced their way inside. I say this to you just to present both sides. I don't want us to get tunnel vision. I don't want us to focus on one person and say, oh, well, the guy we're looking for here has to be someone she knows. Because if we do that, we could make the same mistake that maybe some law enforcement officers made. So let's keep the scope a little wider at this point. And if we feel necessary to narrow in at the end, that's what we'll do. Another thing that would be very important in this case is the window in which the crime occurred. So detectives worked to establish the last confirmed sighting of Stacy, and they located a receipt for the pizza and breadsticks timestamped Saturday, March 21st, 5:58 p.m. Now, because the pizza had been delivered, the driver, a teenager, was interviewed, which, good on them. That's a smart move, and if they hadn't done it, I'd be crucifying them right now. He said that Stacy was home alone when he made the delivery and nothing seemed unusual. He was quickly ruled out as having any involvement. While the delivery driver didn't have much to offer, the receipt itself gave detectives a solid starting point. It confirmed that Stacy was still alive at 6 p.m. on March 21st. Detectives also canvassed the building, hoping to find neighbors who had seen or heard something, and they did find one person who had some very interesting information to share. We're going to talk about it right after the break. You've heard me talk about Hungry Root before, so you know how much I love it by now, and that's because it truly simplifies my life. As a busy parent and someone who works a lot of hours, it's been such a game changer when it comes to reaching my health goals by doing all of my weekly food shopping with Hungry Root. And what I really like about it is it's not just some generic plan. It's tailored to my specific needs, and it's also helped expand my palate. Hungry Root plans all of my meals and groceries for the week, fills my cart, and delivers everything I need to eat healthy every day, all while fitting my health goals, dietary preferences, and budget. And I've talked a lot about Hungry Root meals on this channel. I love basically all of them. One of my all-time favorites, which I had again last week, is their pulled chicken stuffed peppers. Love the taste, love how convenient it is, low carb, although I won't lie to you, I also threw in one of Hungry Root's croissants last week. You know, I won't tell if you don't tell. But overall, love the convenience, love the taste, and I love that it still fits into my health goals, which is very important to me. And unlike other food delivery companies, Hungry Root now has over 50,000 chef-crafted recipes to choose from each week, with many ready in just 15 minutes or less. And with over 1,000 grocery items like smoothies, sweets, kid snacks, salad kits, ready-to-eat meals, and supplements, it's insanely easy to find options that fits everyone's taste and nutrition goals. And Hungry Root holds all of its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high-quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics, offer organic produce and non-GMO options, and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. Hungry Root makes it incredibly easy to get going and actually stick with it if your New Year's resolution is to start fresh with healthy eating. I really think you're going to love Hungry Root as much as I do, and for a limited time, you can get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. All you have to do is go to hungryroot.com/detective and use code detective. One more time, that's hungryroot.com/detective, code detective, for 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life. It's a great deal. Go check it out. You do not want to miss it. All right, we're back. So let's talk about this guy, because this man lived directly above Stacy, and he told police that at around 4 a.m. on March 22nd, he was awakened by what he described as, quote, horrible screams and loud banging noises that sounded like someone was in trouble. Even so, he did not call police. I know. Everyone's throwing stuff at their screen right now. People are kicking their car radios. I'm in the same boat. I read this multiple times and it frustrates me as much each and every time that I read it. I don't get it. I don't like to sit here and bash witnesses, but it's hard not to be critical here. You hear what you describe as horrible screams, and yet you do nothing. Could have stopped this whole thing. Point blank, period. If this person's telling the truth, they could have prevented this whole thing from happening. Sad to say, but that's the reality. And listen, this isn't even where this guy's story ends, because he also told detectives that the following afternoon, he went to check on Stacy because of what he had heard. And when he got there, he found her apartment door open and Stacy was gone. Still, didn't contact authorities. That same day, he also located Stacy's cat Boots just wandering outside. So he brought the cat back up to the apartment and put her inside, and he believed that he had closed the door mostly all the way, not completely, just so that the cat wouldn't escape. And I do believe that's how Danielle found the apartment door on March 24th. It was slightly open. And so you say all this, and it's frustrating. It's frustrating that this person didn't act sooner when they had the chance, because like I had just said, it may have prevented this from getting as out of hand as it did. And yet, just no rational thought here, no common sense, no just kind of putting the pieces together. You hear these horrible screams coming from Stacy's apartment. You go down there, her door's wide open. She's not there. The cat's wandering outside. You think a light bulb would go off at that point and you'd say, okay, something is clearly wrong here. I need to notify someone. Never happens. Never happens. And I know what you're thinking, and we're going to come back to it in the perspective, but I'm right there with you. Trust me. And the only other thing that I want to mention before I move along in this timeline is that Stacy's father had also talked to Stacy on the phone around the time that the pizza was delivered. And he confirmed that at that time she was alone. So we know that that's a concrete time that we can lock in on, that around the time the pizza was delivered, Stacy was alone and she was safe. That's confirmed by two different people. So as detectives worked to narrow down Stacy's timeline, Danielle began making calls of her own. She went through Stacy's phone book and contacted everyone listed, asking if anyone had seen or heard from her, but unfortunately, no one had. Nearly everyone that Danielle spoke with was kind and willing to help any way they could. They answered all of her questions and tried to think through anything that might be relevant. But one person stood out, not because of what they said, but because he wouldn't speak to Danielle at all. Instead of taking her calls, he had his roommates answer the phone. They asked why she kept calling and told her to stop bothering him. And this man was a friend of Stacy's. And I will tell you right now, just full disclosure, I do know his name, but it has never been released publicly. So for the sake of this story, I'm going to refer to him as Mark. Regarding Mark, Danielle and Paula both told us that Mark had feelings for Stacy. At first, he came across as having what they described as, quote, bird with a broken wing quality, which charmed Stacy, but that didn't last long. After getting to know him a little better, Stacy realized that he was pushy and demanding, and she didn't want to date him. She made it clear that she wasn't interested and that she just wanted to be friends. So they remained in contact, and Mark later helped Stacy move into her apartment, the same apartment that she was ultimately abducted from. Because Mark had been willing to go out of his way to help Stacy move, Danielle assumed that he would also be willing to speak with her about whether he had seen or heard from Stacy. So when that didn't happen, obviously it raised some red flags. Danielle later told the media, quote, I just thought for somebody who was so willing to go across the city to help her move, to not even say, oh, you know, I haven't seen her, nothing like that made absolutely no sense to me. All of the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I just thought it was a really weird reaction to have. Danielle shared her concerns about Mark with police and told them that she believed he could potentially be involved, but as far as we know, nothing came of it at the time. With no signs of Stacy anywhere, a wide-scale physical search began. Thousands of flyers were distributed and Stacy's grandparents offered a $10,000 reward, which was matched by Stacy's employer, bringing the total to $20,000. The search continued for months, but Stacy was never found, and it would be more than 6 years before the family received any answers, and they were not the ones they were looking for. We're going to talk about it right after the break. Do you own physical gold? I know most people don't, and Acre Gold is changing that. So here's how it works. You pick a subscription that fits your budget, you make small monthly payments, and once you've stacked enough, they ship beautifully designed 24-karat Swiss gold straight to your door. It's not a number on a screen. It's not an app. It's actually yours. So exit digital and own physical. And by the way, gold's up 65% year over year, and experts say it's not slowing down. So think about the potential that has in the long run. They've got subscribers that have been stacking for 5 years because once you start, you don't want to stop. Plus, they're always running free giveaways. Actually, right now, you can win 3 limited edition gold bars from their ancient collection and exclusive gear. So start your subscription and enter today at getacregold.com. That's getacregold.com. And Acre is spelled A-C-R-E. Go check it out. Build up your financial portfolio right now. You will not regret it. The new year always makes me want to reset, not just mentally, but physically too. And for me, nothing helps more than starting fresh in a clean, organized space. Between work, family, and new projects, my schedule's pretty packed, so outsourcing home cleaning has honestly been a game changer, and that's where HomeAglow comes in. HomeAglow is a top-rated home service platform dedicated to making your space clean and tidy, and they make it ridiculously easy to book a professional cleaner online. Whether you're getting ready for visitors, starting the year with a fresh space, or just trying to stay on top of life, they've got you covered. And it's very simple to use. You go to the website, pick the day and time you want, choose how long you need the cleaning for, and you're matched with a certified cleaner. That's simple. Very, very easy. You can even see photos and reviews of background check cleaners before booking, which makes the whole process feel safe and stress-free. And I don't know about you, but walking into a clean space instantly boosts my productivity and my mood. I know in this office when it's disorganized, I can't do it. It just completely throws me off. I don't know if it's my OCD, but coming in here and having things where they need to be, it just incentivizes me to want to work in that space. So for me, it's a no-brainer. I got to have a clean space or I'm not going to get what I need done. Now, I do want to give a quick disclosure. This episode is sponsored by HomeAglow, and one of their best parts is their Forever Clean membership, which saves you over $30 an hour on all future cleanings. You can book unlimited cleanings starting at just $19 an hour, and everything is backed with HomeAglow's happiness guarantee. And just a heads up, HomeAglow services are only available in the U.S., so if you're ready to take home cleaning off your plate, this is your year. Head over to homeaglow.com/detective to get your first 3 hours of cleaning for just $19. That's HomeAglow.com/detective. Okay, so before the break, we were talking about the search that took place, the $20,000 reward, and how everyone was looking for Stacy, but there was no luck. But then 6 years later, on November 27th, 2004, two hunters were searching for a lost dog in a remote area of Delaware County, Ohio, around 40 minutes from Columbus. They were near a cornfield along State Route 257 North, close to the Scioto River, when they noticed human remains beneath the leaves and brush along a wooded tree line. They were Stacy's. An autopsy was conducted, but due to the condition of Stacy's remains, the medical examiner was unable to determine how she died. What they could say was that she had been murdered. Now, first off, not knowing the cause of death, it's not ideal. It's not a deal breaker, but it's not good, right? You'd rather know how the person was killed so you can start to reverse engineer that. Any patterns of behavior that may match a person of interest or suspect you're already looking at, any potential murder weapons that could be linked to someone you've already identified, all of that kind of goes out the window. I will say I'm a little confused by not being able to determine a cause of death, but being able to say publicly that she was murdered. I'm assuming based on the condition of the body, there was something there to determine that this wasn't a natural cause or an accident. And what that was, they have not shared it with us. So yes, over time, 6 years later, to find a body out in a wooded area, she probably was there most of the time. Decomposition, potential predation from the surrounding area, is going to leave the remains in very poor condition. So I understand why they weren't able to determine a cause of death, but I would like to know more regarding how they determined it was a homicide. It's definitely possible, and it happens all the time. I had multiple cases, one in which I've covered on Breaking Homicide, Judy Rawlings, where even though after an extended period of time, you're still able to say whether this was of natural causes, an accident, or a homicide. So I'm not saying there's anything suspicious about it, but I just wish at this point, like I said, coming up on 30 years, they would be a little bit more transparent about what they saw that led them to this conclusion, because maybe it could help the case. Now, because Stacy's body was found outside Columbus, the case was transferred to the Delaware County Sheriff's Office. Sergeant Jeff Bessinger became the lead detective. He told the Lantern, quote, "All of a sudden, we have a victim of a homicide in our county that we know nothing about. So we're already behind the eight ball to say because we've lost 6 years where we were not involved." Despite that, Bessinger praised the work of the Columbus police, saying, quote, "They did a great job preserving evidence, handling it correctly from the get-go. Right off the bat, they handled it like a crime scene." Now, from a detective's perspective, this isn't what you want. You would like to be in from the foundation and know everything about the case, all the ins and outs, but that's not always how it works. And I will mention that Bessinger went on to say that this wasn't something that was completely uncommon for them. They were accustomed to working cases that crossed jurisdictions because the county included many remote areas where offenders would be traveling across jurisdictions and leaving victims in other counties. So this is something that they had a familiarity with. For Danielle, the shift in agencies marked a turning point. She said that when Delaware County took over, the investigation finally felt like it was back on track. They started over from the start, looking into everything, including previously ruled out suspects. In December of 2004, investigators told the Marion Star that they were analyzing leaves and other materials recovered from the scene, hoping they might provide additional information. As far as we know, no further details about that analysis have ever been released. And for the next 19 years, very little information was shared publicly about the investigation. But behind the scenes, detectives were hard at work. In May of 2023, Dateline featured Stacy's story, and for the first time in years, investigators revealed new information. Sergeant Jeff Bessinger said detectives have DNA evidence. However, he would not say what the evidence was, only that it came from the Columbus Police Department and was provided to Delaware County, quote, later in the investigation. Bessinger added, quote, "Every year on, the DNA technology gets better." And this is what I was referring to earlier. I talked about this carpet at Stacy's apartment. Could that be where the DNA was found? We also talked about the door. They had fingerprints. Did they have anything else there? Were they swabbed the doorknob? Swabbed the door itself? Were they potentially able to recover DNA evidence from that? We also have kitchen counters, cabinets, all these different areas. If Columbus did their job, they swabbed a lot and recovered some DNA. And reading between the lines, what I've gathered here is that although they have DNA, it's not a lot, it hasn't matched anybody yet, and they're hoping that with the advancements in DNA technology, they'll be able to use what they do have, enhance it, develop a sequence that they can eventually identify a person with. And even if they can't identify a person, maybe there'll be a familial match where they'll find someone who's a distant relative of this person, and through genealogy, then they'll be able to make that connection. And if you think this announcement of DNA evidence was major, that wasn't even the biggest headline. Bessinger also revealed that he believes he knows who killed Stacy, but unfortunately, he doesn't have enough evidence to make an arrest. Yet. He told Dateline, quote, "I need to be able to convince 12 people that this person did it. I'm going to get him. I promise you, I'm going to get him. He's a monster, and this isn't something you do once." Bessinger did not name the suspect. However, there are people who believe this is the same man who became angry when Danielle started calling around for information about Stacy's disappearance, the man that I've been referring to as Mark. And there are several reasons why people believe Mark is a suspect beyond the way he reacted when Danielle began asking questions. One reason is that detectives have repeatedly attempted to interview him and obtain an alibi for his whereabouts on March 21st and March 22nd. However, he has never spoken with them, and from the beginning, he has directed investigators to communicate through his attorney. On top of that, shortly after Stacy vanished, Mark moved out of state, and over time, he has reportedly been violent toward multiple women. In 2021, he was charged with aggravated assault, and he pled guilty to a lesser charge, and that's all I know about that, but still, there's a pattern here, and it appears to be a history of violence toward women. But even with that information and that pattern of behavior, it doesn't mean that Mark's the guy. And I do wonder who Sergeant Bessinger was referring to, because that's a big statement to make. There's a lot of people out there right now that care deeply about Stacy, and they're hopeful that you're going to have answers. So when you make a statement like that, people are going to really latch on to it. And you better damn be sure that you're going to get this guy, because you can't be making statements like that just for a TV show. You got to back it up. You got to deliver. And if you're going to make a statement like that, you better be very close to solving it, because although I want to solve every case I work, what I don't want to do is give a family false hope, because to me, and maybe they'll disagree, that's almost worse. Which brings me to December of 2024, when the Delaware County Sheriff's Office announced that Stacy's case had been reassigned to a team of cold case detectives, bringing a fresh set of eyes to the investigation. And this is a good thing. I always recommend this when you're at a standstill and you need more evidence. It's always good to have new eyes and ears on the case, to have them go over existing evidence and see if they spot something that was missed. And that's a good thing, and it happens all the time. However, when I consider the statements that were made by Bessinger, it felt like they were past this. It felt like they just needed a little bit more regarding this person and they were going to get there. Now it seems like a complete revamp. Now, there is a possibility that this is just a formality where we're coming up on almost 30 years, and because of that, they're moving it to the cold case unit, and that's fine too. But it does cause a little concern for me, because historically, when it goes into this format, it's because they're kind of at a dead end and they need a fresh start. But who knows? I'm hoping that the statements that were made by Bessinger, coupled with the fact that they publicly announced they had DNA evidence, that this is more so just trying to find something to connect to this particular person and potentially the DNA evidence. We'll see. I hope we get answers sooner than later. And I'm not the only one that feels this way. Stacy's loved ones are also hopeful that this new change will bring answers. Paula told the media, quote, "If you know what happened to Stacy, it's not too late to be the hero in her story, to come forward and get this monster off the streets. All this time has passed. You might tell yourself, maybe it doesn't matter anymore, or what difference does it really make? But it still matters a lot. It still matters to us." Unfortunately, that's the most recent update we have in Stacy's case. Her killer remains free, and her family and friends are still waiting for answers. All right, let's dive in this perspective, and I'll get right to the point, because I talked a lot in this episode about some different things, but I just want to go over a couple potential theories and a couple potential suspects. The first one being the upstairs neighbor. I got some issues with him. I don't know if he's been vetted. I don't know if he has a solid alibi, but according to him, he was above her apartment all night long. I want to know what their relationship was. How close were they? Did he have a crush on her in any way, shape, or form? Was there anybody else in his apartment with him that can substantiate that he was in his apartment all night long? You might think on the surface that him coming forward and providing this information, which is critical to the case, could be a sign that he is a witness in all of this, and that very well may be true. However, is it possible that if he was the person responsible for this, that he would incorporate himself into the story, provide information that you wouldn't necessarily expect a suspect to provide in order to create the illusion that he's a witness, right? I heard these horrible screams. I can give you a time frame in which it happened. Maybe it's not even the correct time. And then the next day he went downstairs and he saw the door open, and maybe he touched the door. Maybe he touched the door frame. I don't know. And then he goes further. He finds Boots, the cat, touches the cat as well, brings the cat into the apartment. therefore transferring even some more of his DNA as well, giving him a justification as to why you would find his fingerprints and or DNA inside the apartment. Got a lot of questions about him. I'm not accusing him of anything. He may have been completely cleared. It almost seems too obvious that it would be him, if I'm being honest. But if we go off Sergeant Bessinger's statements, I know some people believe it could be Mark. Why couldn't it be this guy? That's all I'm saying. Again, not pointing fingers at him at all. I'm just asking questions. Speaking of Mark, that's the obvious one, right? I can go over that quick. He had feelings for her. He had been in the apartment multiple times. She had turned him down, even though he seemed like he was okay with it. Was he really okay with it? He hasn't been cooperative with Danielle. He hasn't been cooperative with law enforcement. He moved away shortly after Stacy disappeared. He has apparently a history of violence toward women. So there's a lot of red flags there, and you definitely have to track him down and keep an eye on him. And my question at this point would be, what DNA evidence was found inside the apartment? What fingerprints were found inside the apartment? And what is being done to obtain his fingerprints and DNA, if that hasn't been done already? Even though he has an attorney, if you have probable cause, you can get a search warrant and get his DNA and get his fingerprints. So go to the attorney and see what you can do and see what his resistance is toward it. So I'm assuming these things have been done, and if they haven't, they need to be. And if you've been watching me at all, then you know what my next theory is going to be, and that's the stranger theory. I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't throw it in there, because there's nothing to rule that out at this point. Yes, it could be Mark. Yes, it could be the upstairs neighbor. But it could also be someone who lived in the apartment building, maybe had passed Stacy a couple times, but really didn't have a previous relationship with her. This person could have been watching her for months, developed a fascination for her, and Stacy may have never known it. And it's not just neighbors, right? It could be employees who worked at the apartment complex, construction workers, anybody from that surrounding area who would have been able to watch Stacy from a distance and learn her pattern of behavior. They would have also been able to learn who was going and coming from the apartment and when she was more than likely going to be alone. I would also say, because of the significant relationship she was in, that this person would only know that nobody else was there if they were close to that apartment complex, i.e. someone who was also living there. So I don't know what's been done to vet out everybody who lived at the apartment at that time. And I've said this before in other cases, you need to have a running list of every single person who was there at that time and anyone who may have been visiting them as well. You also have to run down their criminal history at that time, but also currently, 30 years later. Maybe this was the first crime they committed, and since then they've committed multiple crimes that fit a pattern of behavior. The only way you're going to know that is by going back to that original list and going over it all again. And that's what this cold case unit would do if they're doing the right thing. Also, bring people back in, re-interview them, see if they give the same story. Yes, there may be some variances in the story because it's been so many years, but overall, because of what occurred here and how significant it was, most people are going to be able to tell you a pretty similar story. So you got to go over and do it all again and just make sure that everyone's still on the up and up. And as far as the DNA, that's self-explanatory, right? If they have something that's usable that could lead to the suspect that they haven't been able to rule out as being from Stacy or someone who had the right to be there, then yes, we need science and technology to catch up so they can take whatever they have, extract the DNA from it, develop a sequence, upload it to a genealogical database, and try to locate a familial match. That's usually what happens here. It may not be the direct person, but it may be a distant relative. And then from there, genealogists can trace it back to this person who would have some connection to this area at that time. And that happens every single day. It's a common story that we're hearing. So it leads me to believe that at this point, they have something, but they're unable to get that sequence. There's also been some developments in the genealogical world with IGG where there's some new barriers to entry. Talking to my genealogist, we've now learned that certain databases, I won't say them here, that we've used for many, many years are not allowing genealogists to use their databases for IGG, investigative genetic genealogy. So it does make our job a lot harder. And I don't necessarily agree with it. We're not talking law enforcement officers. We're talking genealogists. And some of these people do it to develop family trees. So it's a tough area. I think that we should have a format with these databases where they can allow people to opt out. But if they decide to be part of a system where genealogists can use the information to potentially solve a homicide, I still believe in my heart a lot of people are going to be willing to do that. In fact, I recently had a DNA test sent to me, and I'm going to be doing it myself just to show people that it's very simple. And although there is some paranoia surrounding it, I believe it's very safe. So if you trust me and you believe that I'm going to steer you guys in the right direction, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I'm going to submit my DNA, and I obviously implore all of you to do the same. And regarding Stacy's case, yes, we've had a few witnesses come forward, but like Paula said, maybe there's someone out there right now who, for one reason or another, hasn't felt compelled enough to come forward yet. So maybe they have a change of heart after hearing or seeing this. So just to recap, 23-year-old Stacy Colbert was abducted from her Columbus, Ohio apartment sometime after 6 p.m. on March 21st, 1998. More than 6 years later, on November 27th, 2004, Stacy's remains were found in a remote area of Delaware County, Ohio. Her death was ruled a homicide, but no one has been arrested, and her murder remains unsolved. If you have any information about Stacy's case, you can contact Central Ohio Crime Stoppers by calling 614-461-8477 or by visiting centralohiocrimestoppers.org. And my final words, as always, go out to Stacy's friends and family, specifically Danielle and Paula. Thank you for being part of this case and allowing me to cover Stacy's story. I know it's something that's very important to you, and I hope I did the case justice. I know you feel like you might be alone in this, and I really like what Paula had to say. This really matters to us. You're living with it every day. But I want you to know you're not alone, and that's the beauty of true crime. There are hundreds of thousands of people who have now listened to this or watched this who care just as deeply as you do, and they want to see Stacy get justice. And we're going to try to help with that. And I really hope we do. I really hope I get the opportunity to sit right here and let all of you know that there's an update in Stacy's case. And it wouldn't be the first time it happened. Danielle, Paula, I know you're watching right now. I know you're listening. There have been many stories that I've covered where I've come back less than a year later and let everyone know that the person responsible is now in custody. And I hope that's the case with Stacy's case. But until then, everyone stay safe out there, and I'll see you soon.